Này. Honey Bowden's not in that picture. Hey, Brittany.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Hanging in here. It's been a long week.
Oh, has it? I'm sorry. Hey, Jenny.
Hey.
Jenny, are you chiming in to hear Kelsey? She must be muted.
I think so.
Yeah. So what's been long about your week?
My first grader has been long online learning and trying to get him to focus on school and all. It's just a challenge. Some weeks are better than others, and this was just a struggle bus week, as my husband and I like to call it.
Oh,
he's
no.
Trying to get hard on them, but it's been a long week.
I know you're glad. Well, is he at Perimeter?
Or he's not. No. Okay. He's got public school out in Alpharetta here.
Do they still do Friday classes?
No, they're just totally all online. Hey, Kelsey.
Hi,
hey, Kelsey.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Hey, Miss Gail.
How are you? You look great.
I am doing the like hair, makeup, shirt, but leggings and flippers thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't even have like a nice shirt on or anything, but I do have earrings in.
Perfect. Can y'all hear me okay, or should I get some headphones?
I can hear you.
I can hear you fine.
Okay.
Hey, Liz.
Hi.
Liz.
How's it going?
That must be where you teach.
It is. The world.
Teacher Liz.
Yeah. How's it going, everyone?
Hey, Vicky.
Hey. Hey, guys.
How are you?
Good. Hey, Kelsey.
How you doing, Vicky?
Good.
Will the puppy make an appearance?
I doubt it. I'm in the basement.
So you just, that's where she was last week. She left the main floor and went to the basement.
Yeah, I'm hiding.
I don't
know. How are you guys doing?
We're good. We're good. I just keep saying like good days and bad days, mm-hmm. you know, like probably more good days than bad days, but just adjusting and teaching kindergarten and, you know.
Oh gosh, no.
Not how you thought the school year would end.
Yeah.
No. No, I was thinking about it, you know, with Addie being in kindergarten, I don't know how many months she was in school, but I think she'll be out of school for like just as long as she was in school, basically. It's going to be weird going back into first grade. And that honey, I just saw her.
Yes, she just jumped down. I'm up in our old bedroom. So. Aww. I think Herschel came in from his walk. So she had to jump off the bed.
That's awesome. So. Oh, she had to jump off the bed because Herschel came.
Yeah, to go see who it was. Kelsey, I hadn't thought about that, but that is interesting. That'll be the way it is for a lot of kindergartners.
True. It's true. I feel like in first grade, March will hit and she'll be like, okay, this is like about the end of the school year.
Does she want you to just go ahead and keep homeschooling her?
No. I like it okay. The tricky part is just the other kids.
Yeah. Yeah. How has Gwinnett been doing it? I have a friend that teaches in Fulton and she says that like they've been doing science on Thursdays. Addie's in kindergarten, so have they assigned different days of the week for different subjects or just kind of doing whatever?
No, they have not. They give all the assignments on Monday, but they have every day an assignment in five subjects: reading, writing, math, science, and then a like connection class, which rotates.
Yeah, specials.
Spanish, PE, music. So it's a lot, for sure.
Yeah, it's busy.
Some of it's worksheets, which is easy, but some of it has been like on the computer, and a kindergartner who can barely spell words. Writing,
sitting there,
doesn't know where the letters are on the keyboard, it can be a little tedious.
Oh, wow. I hadn't thought about that. That is tedious. Does she handle it well? Does it frustrate her at all?
It frustrates her. She's a perfectionist. And she's also easily distracted.
Mm.
It's tricky, but overall, I think she's doing fine.
Oh, I'm sure she is.
Yeah.
How long did it take her to do? Does it take her a while to do it?
It's funny. Every week has gotten like shorter and shorter. In the beginning, it was like 3 or 4 hours a day, which is well under half of what, you know, her school day is almost 8 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're down to like an hour or an hour and a half a day to knock it all out. So I feel like maybe that might be for me, like getting the hang of it and learning how to be more. I don't know.
Yeah. My son's a first grader, but he's in Forsyth County and his is broken up like that. And they say it's supposed to take anywhere from 60 to 90 minutes. And yeah, it definitely depends on if he's going to have a struggle bus week or not. And it definitely doesn't just take 90 minutes. It's taken a lot longer than that if he has a struggle bus week, like this week. But, you know, he's getting there. Yeah, everything's on the computer like that there too. So it takes a while.
And you have another son as well.
I do. I have a 2-year-old.
What have you been doing with the 2-year-old during school time?
Thankfully, my husband's been here too. So we've kind of divided and conquered. And one takes the 2-year-old and the other one takes my 6-year-old and does school. But on days that he's not here, my 2-year-old goes off and gets locked in his room and kind of does his own thing. Thankfully, he'll play by himself while my 6-year-old makes videos and stuff like that he's got to do for school. But you definitely got to get tricky with what you do.
Yes.
Yeah.
Kelsey, what do you do with Dalton and Eloise?
We're figuring it out. Depends. I was actually texting Jenny about this today because my best school hour is before Eloise gets up in the morning. So she sleeps in till like 9 usually. So like 8 to 9, we try and knock out as much as we can. And so Dalton, I give him his homework as well, which is either like, he's 4, like tracing letters like on paper, or I'm like, take the little iPad thing for kids and play letter games with Cookie Monster or whatever. So he's getting it.
I was going to say, I've done story times, too. I don't know if that would help you or not. But there's a lot of, like, I know, like, Forsyth, anyhow, they do a lot of storybook reading with different librarians throughout the day and whatnot. And so I put that on, and my son likes that because it's, like, on a continuous cycle, and they can't get out anywhere else because I locked the iPad. On the parental locks and all, but he watches that and his thought that that's great because they do a lot of kiddie books and stuff like that, so that might help. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's definitely tricky though, having 2 kids and trying to homeschool too.
Yeah, once Eloise is up, it's like it's a mess.
Yes.
Hey,
hello.
Oh, look at that baby. So big.
She's got so much hair now.
I know.
Is it
like baby show and tell, children show and tell?
I know.
Mm-hmm. Can you say hi?
Ed?
Ella. Ella, say hi.
Hi, Ella. Oh,
hi.
So cute.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night.
Okay.
Oh, God. Aww. Oh.
So. I think I'm supposed to get things started, but it has been a day, or really just like an afternoon at my house. There's been a lot of poop in my life today, and it's not been great. So thankfully, the day ended well, but it got a little hairy there in the middle. So if anybody has like something really good to share, I would like to hear it, and then we can get started with you, Kelsey.
Like a win from this week.
Yeah, a win. What has been a win from the week?
Hey, Meredith.
Hi, how are y'all?
Good. Hi.
Hey, Ashley. I don't think I said hey to you.
Yeah, hi, Ashley.
I saw you come in. How about a win from the week?
This was anti-social distancing, but my son's almost 17 months. And our little neighbor girl, who actually they go to Perimeter, but she fell and skinned her knee and started bleeding. So I went inside to go get her a washcloth just to stop. And she was sitting like on our driveway. And then my son has just started walking late, but he went up behind her and gave her a hug.
Oh, that's so sweet.
So, like, oh, well, yes. Since that was at least.
That was sweet of him. Yeah. Look at his tender heart.
Yeah.
Oh. Anybody else have a good one?
Anybody else? Any other wins?
We had my in-laws over. It was my father-in-law's birthday today. And we haven't had anybody in our house yet, except for like the 4 of us that live here. And so I found on my phone a video from my 6-year-old who's in school with Addie. And she was like, this is the most exciting thing. Like, she took my phone away and I didn't know what she was doing. So I was texting them pictures and she was like, this is the virus, but we have other people in our house. This is the most exciting thing that has happened. And I'm like, Ellie, this will be fantastic when you're like, you know, I don't know, 30, however, like just for posterity to be like, this was the virus and you have other people in your house. So, I don't know, that was so funny.
That's cute.
And for you to kind of see how she's experiencing this and that expression of other people in the house. Yeah. So fun. Oh,
that's funny. The way that children have referred to what's going on, the virus, my Alecta just goes, a lot of people are sick. And like, we'll talk about our neighbors. She's like, yeah, when this neighbor gets better, we can go visit them. And I think she just thinks that everyone is sick. And so I'm like, no, they're fine. Like, it's just everywhere else. Well, before we get started, just if anybody has prayer requests, feel free to put them in the chat box. I will put them in the Facebook group after this.
Can I say something?
Mm-hmm.
And also in the chat box with the prayer request, this is our last meeting. So we will have kind of a brainstorming. So if anybody wants to be on the brainstorming kind of meeting for next year, put your name in the chat box, want to be in on that meeting. And then if you have speaker suggestions or topic suggestions, put those in that. Mm-hmm. And then Liz, how do I get all that off of the chat?
You can copy and paste it, or I can copy and paste it and send it to you. I just have been trying to do that before we close out the meeting.
Okay, that'd be great. So if, as you think, just put in the chat box.
Mm-hmm. And I'll make a note of that in the Facebook group too, and we can email Morgan to send that out as well.
That's great.
That's great. And y'all, if you have any feedback from this past year, please let us hear it. Okay, so as we're brainstorming, we can tweak things or change things up if we need to. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Yes, I think Kelsey is on. Kelsey, mother of three with her little youngest Peanut, being brought into the family in a most special way. Eloise, full of life, little tiny petite thing with long, beautiful hair. Always has. And just the perfect,
summed her up perfectly.
The perfect number three, the perfect
She's
addition.
Tiny in body, but big in hair and big in personality.
Yes. She's got to make her way in a family of three.
She was killing me just now. I was just telling her, I'm going to go talk about you. And literally her reaction was to get up close to my face and pinch my nose and go honk. Just two. It's just ridiculous. She's ridiculous.
She is precious.
She's a mess. Well, yeah, I think there are some people on here that I haven't met. So, hey, I'm Kelsey Dykes. I live in Petrie Corners. I have three kids. Addie is six. Dalton is four. And little Eloise is two. And she is my adopted little love. The older two are our biological children. And so I got connected with Moms Connect years ago. I remember coming to my first Moms Connect when I was pregnant with Addie and being very overwhelmed, but since have had quite a love affair with Moms Connect. So I'm glad that y'all are plugged in, and I know it's blessing you immensely. And then also when I'm not with the kids, I work part-time with an organization called Promise 686, who advocates for vulnerable children by setting up ministries in local churches to serve foster and adoptive families. So I spend a lot of time thinking about adoption, and I'm passionate about it. So I'm excited we get to talk about it today. My plan is pretty flexible, but it's to share a little bit about our adoption story and then talk briefly about orphan care in general. We know that God has called each of us to orphan care in verses like James 1:27, but that is so different for all of us. I am absolutely convinced that not everyone is called to adopt, and that is a good thing, but all of us are called to care for orphans in some way or another. So my prayer is that each of y'all would leave feeling encouraged and also just kind of excited and envisioned about what orphan care could look like for you and your family in a way that feels like fun and exciting and very natural in this age and stage, because you don't have a lot of extra capacity with little kids. So I think the best thing to do, and Liz, you can speak into this, I have the chat box open. So at any point while I'm talking, you want to just type a question in there, that would be awesome. And I can either answer it right away or like as we get closer to the end. And then at the end, I would love for us to just get to chat and bounce ideas off each other. And you can ask me anything you want. I'm open book. Sound good?
Yes.
Okay. Awesome. Thanks. So adoption for me started actually long before I was born. My mom is adopted. She was adopted domestically as an infant. And so her birth mom was unable to care for her, and she was adopted when she was like 6 months old. But after I was born, her birth mom came back into her life and was really kind of like a grandma to me. So I was raised with her birth mom and her adoptive mom, both as grandparents. So adoption has kind of always been part of my worldview, which I know is rare, but also just kind of always something that interested me. And I just liked the idea of as I grew up and became an adult. And then all of that kind of fell into place more when I became a Christian in at the end of high school. I was not raised in a Christian home, but when I met Jesus in high school, it all kind of fell into place, because really the gospel is an adoption story, as y'all know. We don't deserve the rights and the privileges of being sons of God, but because of Jesus, we get to take on Jesus's name and his rights and his inheritance and everything that he earned for us and be adopted by God. So it makes sense that this is something that we would be passionate about. So my husband and I, my now husband and I, started preparing for marriage, and we were engaged. I remember this issue coming up very clearly and me being like, I'm pretty sure that adoption is going to be part of my story and part of how I want to have kids. And he was like, yeah, okay, me too. And I was like, well, that's great. So that, thankfully, that was easy. For a lot of people, it's not. They have one who does, one who doesn't. Anyways, that, thankfully, that was easy for us. And so we always knew it was like kind of part of the plan, but didn't really have any idea how that might pan out. And so our story, beginning to end, with adopting took a full 3 years and was pretty much constant up and downs, unknowns, chaos. But it's always sweet to talk about, because at every turn, the Lord was so faithful to guide us, direct us, encourage our hearts. So it started, we decided we wanted to go ahead and have biological child first, but then infertility came into the picture unexpectedly. And then we started looking at adoption, but then we did end up getting pregnant. And then when Addie, our oldest, was about one, we were like, okay, no, now for sure, let's go ahead and adopt. And at the time, had no idea how we wanted to adopt. We researched international adoption, foster care adoption, domestic infant adoption. There are many different options. And at the time, because Addie was only one, international wasn't an option. Most countries have rules about what kind of families they'd like their children to be placed in, and most of them want your youngest child to be a certain age. So anyways, we kind of ended up looking at domestic adoption, but realized through the process that a birth family, the idea of a birth family, was something that actually really excited us. It didn't at first. It's kind of scary knowing that your child would have a family who could be in our lives and all the mess that brings. But it ended up kind of being something that we felt passionate about, loving on a birth family in a way that was as much as we would love on our child. So long story short, we go with domestic adoption. We find an agency that we are really excited about and passionate about, and start to move forward and end up It was crazy. It was like 6 months or something, that whole process. And then we find out that I was pregnant again, which was extra surprising that time, because they had like literally convinced me that I was entirely infertile. So we match with a little boy. We end up having to pull out of that match because of postpartum anxiety after the pregnancy. And I just feel like that whole time I was like, Lord, what are you doing? Like, obviously you would call us to this. This isn't the right time. I don't know what's going on. So we take a break from adoption entirely for like a whole year. And then when Dalton, our second child, was getting close to two, we decided to try again. So we move forward again, same thing, domestic adoption, same agency. And this time, for whatever reason, it just all fell into place. The very day that we went active, which is means all your paperwork is in order and you're ready to start presenting to birth moms, we make like basically a fancy scrapbook about our family that gets given to birth moms, and the birth moms get to choose between all the scrapbooks, or profile books, they're called, which family she would like to choose. So we go active, and that very same day, Morgan, our daughter Eloise's birth mom, requests books, profile books. So this like literally happens on the same day. She decides she wants profile books. We go active. She sees our book and she chooses us, and we match all at once. So it was like, whoa, this is for all this time, all of a sudden really, really fast. And now we have a name and a face and a specific baby that we are praying for. I ended up finding out later that part of the reason she chose us was because she had just lost one of her best friends in a car accident. And his name was Dalton, which was our second son's name, who had come unexpectedly like through this adoption process. So I felt like the Lord was saying, like, look at all this that had to be in place for me to get you here. Which was sweet. So we match with Morgan. She lives in Florida. We go down to Florida to meet her and have lunch with her. And that was super awkward, as you can imagine. I mean, her life, has been really, really hard. Her parents are both addicted to drugs and have been in and out of rehab and jail. And she, at the time that we matched with her was 19 and already was parenting a four-year-old little girl. So she dropped out of high school when her older daughter was born, and now she was pregnant with her second and just knew she couldn't take care of that baby. But it was amazing. I mean, we just praise her and count her our hero, because she could have chose to terminate that pregnancy, and she made some really, really hard decisions to choose life for that baby and then to choose a family for the baby, who is now Eloise. So we're just hoping to communicate how grateful we were to her. And so that was the lunch in Florida. Then about 2 months later, her baby was born. We were supposed to be there when she was born, but we didn't get there in time. We got there about an hour after she was born, and got to love on her and enjoy her in the hospital. She did have some complications. Morgan used drugs during pregnancy, which we didn't know about. And that had some health implications for Eloise, but she is happy and healthy these days. And really the hardest part kind of came next. The Morgan claimed one guy was the father of the baby. She wasn't like 100% sure, but she was 99% sure. And he signed the paperwork, Morgan signed the paperwork. So the day after Eloise is born, we are celebrating big. Like, this baby is ours. She is our daughter. We will love her forever. And we're going to have our happy ending. And then the next day we get a call that a 17-year-old boy had stepped up and called the agency and said, no, I'm sure that I'm actually the father and I want to parent her. Mm-hmm. And so all of a sudden we're thrown into this again with the Lord, like, what are you doing? We're here. We thought this was over. We love this child. She's been in our arms for days now, and we've been taking care of her, and we're so committed. And now you're going to take her away. Not only that, but you're going to put her in a home of a boy who is 17 and does not know how to care for a baby. And so we were scared to death. We had to make a decision. We knew that the legal process would take months and we would care for her in the interim. So I had to like kind of decide at that moment. I mean, I remember calling friends and saying, like, I feel like I want to just like wall off my heart. Like, I can't care for and love this baby that might leave. But that is kind of like the most spiritual, impactful moment, I feel like, for the whole story, because God just so clearly communicated to me that the way he loved us was vulnerable. He put everything on the line to love us, and now he was calling me to put my heart on the line and love Eloise so vulnerably, knowing she might not stay with us forever. So we did that in faith, and thankfully that guy kind of fell by the wayside. He didn't show up for his appointments. He didn't show up for his court dates. And then we, the judge did like kind of decide through the process that we were the best place for Eloise. So he granted us finalization, and she became ours officially about 6 months after she was born. And then just for kicks and giggles afterwards, we had the original father tested, paternity tested, and it was actually the original father anyways. This second teenage boy was not even the dad. So of course, thanks for all that stress. So anyways, 6 months old, we get to finalize. Eloise is ours forever, and we have been living the dream. I'm just kidding. Since then, trying to navigate a birth mom relationship. We were really hoping that Morgan would want to do more in the way of like kind of visits and phone calls and stuff like that. She has decided that is not what she wants. So we actually have an Instagram account that we set up where it's very private, but I post pictures regularly of her, of Eloise, and Morgan's the only follower, so she gets to kind of catch up on her life and stay involved, which I like, and I can always message her on there. I mean, she's 21, so I feel like Instagram DMs is actually kind of the best way to get in touch with her. So that has been sweet and weird and messy, but I'm grateful. I mean, Eloise now, our relationship, it's hard. I was trying to sum up like kind of, well, what is it like now to have an adoptive child? It's different. It is different than my biological children, but not in a way that is better or worse or more like, I obviously love her exactly the same as I love my other children. And that is a beautiful gift, but our relationship is different. I mean, when I look at her, I see Morgan because I know her birth parents and she looks just like them. And she looks just like her half sister. Rather than when I look at my biological kids, I see me and my husband, mostly my husband. His genetics seem to be stronger, but so it's different, but it is still just as sweet. And so I think she's just kind of the sweetest reminder from the Lord that he loves to give his kids good gifts and take care of his kids. So I'm so grateful. And she is an absolutely average wild animal 2-year-old right now. So she's into everything and keeping me crazy. So that is most of the story, and that's enough about me. So I would love to maybe hear from y'all a little bit about kind of where you're at with adoption so that I can talk to that a bit. So I guess if you have a friend, a close friend that's adopted or adopting, could you raise your hand? Cool. Okay, that's a lot. If you are adopting or interested in adopting, could you raise your hand? Awesome. Love it. Okay, so orphan care, I would love to just chat about that for a second. I do think that it's a really natural way for us to serve when we have little kids. And the need is obviously really great. There is an estimated 150 million orphans worldwide, and there's more than 100,000 foster kids in the US waiting to be adopted. So big numbers and big needs. And I mean, maybe this is just me, but I'm thinking we are already kind of in this season. We're feeding babies and wiping bottoms and making dinners. And so that is the kind of stuff that orphans need. And that's also the kind of stuff that families who are caring for orphans need. So if you are considering adopting or being a foster parent yourself, I think that my biggest advice would be to just spend so much time praying and then to ask people their stories. I think the more that you can meet with people and talk about their stories, talk about all different stories, domestic adoption, international adoption, and then just kind of see what happens to that spark. I think that would be my best advice for that person. We also, Promise 686 does a class called Adoption 101. So if you are interested, you can attend that class and find out kind of all you need to know base level about adoption and your options. And then for the rest of us, my biggest thoughts or advice would be this. First of all, just kind of simply like loving on your friends who are walking through it. It is a really, really emotionally, complex journey. And so, I mean, I would have stopped and quit so many times if I hadn't had those friends to call and to be honest and raw with, and who just loved me and loved my child and loved me through it. So love those friends, be a friend to them. And then kind of two practical applications that you could also consider. Promise at Perimeter does these things called care communities. So when a Perimeter foster family steps up and takes a foster child placement, we create care communities around them that provide them things like meals, respite care, which is like babysitting help, childcare, like even mentoring for older children. And they have found that that foster families who have these care communities are incredibly less likely to quit fostering. Typically, over half of foster families quit within the first year just because it's so taxing. So when they have these care communities and have people around them and loving on them, they are so much more likely to keep at it and love these vulnerable children. So you could sign up to be on a care community. Typically, I know Liz is on a care community. Probably a few of you have heard about this. You typically are committing to bringing one meal a month. That is not that bad. Or caring for them by doing some kind of childcare or a mentorship meeting once a month. The other option that I would love to just give you as an easy takeaway, we are partnered with a group called Care Portal. And Care Portal, is their goal is to match the needs of the vulnerable children in our community with people at churches. So basically what happens is someone out there, a social worker who's meeting with a at-risk family, would identify needs they had. Potentially, let's say a biological family is at risk of losing their child into foster care because they don't have a bed. That's considered neglect, but they cannot afford a bed, period. The social worker would put into Care Portal, this family, all they need to be able to stay unified and as a family is a bed. Does anyone have a bed? And so we receive these emails, hey, this family needs a bed. Does anyone have a bed? Twin bed. And you would have the opportunity to say, like, yes, I have a bed. It'd be my pleasure. Or yes, I can give you $100 towards a bed, whatever that would look like. So Care Portal emails go out to a group of us at Perimeter and give us the opportunity to just meet really simple needs. To help love on orphans in our area in a low commitment way. So I guess let's just use the chat box. That's probably the best way. If you are interested in signing up for a care community or for Care Portal emails, just put your email address over there and I'll copy and paste them at the end and get that all set up. All right, that's all I got. I'd love to chat with any of you who have questions or I don't know, interests, anything like that. Is the best thing to do just unmute everybody?
Yeah.
Kelsey, I can talk a little bit about being in a care community if you'd like.
Sure.
So I've been there are different levels of commitment like you were talking about, and basically my commitment has just been like basic. I bring a meal once a month, but you can offer, like you said, babysitting or other sorts of care. I know a lot of, sometimes, foster parents have a lot of appointments that they have to go to. So you can sign up to be an adult who could drive to appointments to give the foster parent a break. And I have been on teams for people that I know, but there are also ways, you can be on a care community for anybody at the church. But it's been, I've enjoyed it because I feel like I'm helping out my friend who's in the process of adopting, but then it's also helped me learn more about foster care. I think it's helped my awareness and helped me like remember to pray for these families. But yeah, that's me.
We are so grateful for you, Liz.
Oh,
you are so faithful and serving.
It's been hard to remember, like, even though these things, like, I feel like life is very chaotic now, but I'm still like, oh my gosh, like it must be even harder for them. So I'm like, I gotta bring her a meal.
Out of curiosity, have you still been doing it in this season? Has the family still wanted it?
Yeah. So I sent an Uber Eats gift card, or I sent a gift card last week, and I'm going to bring her something soon. But yeah, I think now, because my friend is also juggling the parenting and working and schooling. So yeah, I know it's appreciated.
Anybody else have questions or comments?
I have only done that once, like filling in for somebody and friends in the neighborhood who foster some, and they adopted two of their sons. They have six boys, and the youngest two are adopted. And then they fostered some, and it was just interesting to take the meal, kind of hear the story, meet the child that they were fostering, and really even watch for in their house that the other kids really helping and picking up the slack, and the older boys, especially with their younger brothers and homework, and reminding them, no, go put it in your backpack right now while the mom's upstairs trying to, you know, bathe the foster child and take care of the baby. It was just, I mean, it was eye-opening and good to see. And I appreciated, you know, just getting called and asked if I could fill in the gap that one time. So anyway, but it's sweet to watch, and it's impacted our neighbors, their adoption and then fostering. Cause some people have said to me, I don't do anything for anybody. Mm-hmm. And look at all that they're doing. I need to change something, which has opened up great conversations.
Kelsey, what's been your discussion with your two older children? I know they're still little, but how did you get them kind of, I don't know, oriented or plugged into the changes in their family?
Yeah, that's a great question. I remember feeling really overwhelmed by the prospect of that, like kind of explaining that to them. And kids always surprise me with how simply they will just take something in stride. So I remember just telling them very simply, like, we're gonna have a baby. It's gonna be confusing because this baby is not in mommy's belly. This baby is actually in another mommy's belly. But that mommy is unable to care for her baby. She does not have money to buy milk or to buy a bed for this baby. And so she decided that her baby would actually be better off with us. And we are so thankful for that. And so the kids were like, all right, great, you know. And so meeting the baby, it was all a very similar process, other than they couldn't watch mommy's belly grow. You know, they met her when they came down to Florida. And I almost feel like they took it like kind of too far. Like they would go at the time and tell people, we have two adopted kids in our house. And I'd be like, what? And they'd be like, yeah, Gunner, the dog, and Eloise. Like, Gunner also is adopted. I don't know. I just think that adoption became so much a part of their, like, mindset that it just is, I don't know, it's so much a part of how they think about it. They feel like there is just generally two ways you can have a baby, a biological baby or an adopted baby. And so I guess maybe that was because they were so young. I know if your other children at home are older, it is more of a discussion. And I know the advice in that case is to make sure that the child is as much a part of the decision making as the parents, like presenting this is something we want to do. Is that something that you would be on board with? And making sure you get their buy-in. But for my kids at the time, we're 4 and 2, you know. They really did not care. It was easier than I thought, thankfully.
And with some of those lifestyle differences, what's the advice on kind of sharing with them as they get older? And
yeah, that's a good question too. And I'm open to figure it out as we go a bit. I mean, our heart has always been that, we would never hide Eloise's story. There wouldn't be like a moment where we're like, you're adopted, which could be an option for us. People say that she actually really looks like us. I don't think so, but I mean, she's Caucasian. She has
tan hair. She's so it could be that, you know, we could wait and present, oh my gosh, you're adopted, like kind of how they used to. But our hope is that like her story would be celebrated all along the way. Like, isn't that so cool how God wrote your story? And so thankfully we have a lot of like children's books that discuss adoption in a positive light and celebrate it. And, you know, as early as she can understand, we would talk about her story and celebrate her story and talk about it with the other kids. And it's just going to be part of the dialogue. But as far as the brokenness and, you know, things like drug use and pregnancy out of wedlock and those kind of things that are going to be new and different to our kids, they have that, none of that has come up yet. My hope is that just kind of as their age, you know, allows, and as we reach those places, that we would be able to communicate with grace and try and present it in a way that's appropriate. I mean, my hope for Eloise particularly is that I don't know that that stuff is important for her to know. And my hope is that we would always talk about her birth mom in a way that's just really celebratory. Like, we are so grateful that she chose life for you and then chose a life with us for you. So, I mean, yeah, I hope they get to like meet one day and that she wouldn't see her as a drug user. She would see her as a, you know, a hero in some ways. So here's to hoping. The latest news is that Morgan, her birth mom, is actually pregnant again and due in June, and she has decided to parent this baby, which has been very weird and interesting for us because she parents a daughter already. Then she, you know, chose to make an adoption plan for Eloise, and now she's pregnant with a little girl again. And so I'll have to tell Eloise one day that she chose to keep a little girl before you and a little girl after you, which is heartbreaking. And I was really, really sad when I found out because I know that's going to hurt Eloise's heart later. So just praying that God would go before us in those conversations and that she would, you know, again, see her story as a blessing and, a Lord, you know, a God authored story and not a result of brokenness as kind of the chief defining thing about it. If that makes sense.
Kelsey, this is Morgan Forrester. I don't know why my video is not working. Sorry, I just stopped it. Thanks for sharing. Here's a logistical question, and I know that this is like kind of private information that you don't have to share much to, but logistically, like, what did you guys do to financially prepare? Like, did you do any fundraising, or did you just do savings, or what percent did you like fundraise, or?
Yes. Great question. Great question. Adoption is very, very expensive. And so that tends to be the number one barrier for people. You know, as they feel their heart moving towards it, but they see the bill and they're like, there's no way we can make that work. So yes, to all of the above, we saved, for it and intentionally like kind of fought for that from the very beginning of our marriage. We fundraised some, we, did like kind of general fundraising from friends and family. Our friends and family were so kind to just like bless us and love on us for that. We promised 686. Another thing they do is adoption grants. So they awarded us a matching grant. So for every dollar that we were able to raise from friends and family, Promise matched that money. And they also housed our money in an account so that when our friends and family gave, it was tax deductible for them, which was such a gift as well. And then we also did a big fundraiser, which was kind of fun and silly and also crazy how the Lord made it work out. We did a garage sale, which sounds silly, but we asked like all of our network and our networks, you know, to donate their stuff, which I felt like was a much easier ask than money. Cause I'm like, whatever you're getting rid of anyways, would you give it to us? And so we just said that for like a week and people just came and dropped truckload after truckload after truckload of like nice stuff. And they just wanted to get rid of it. And so we had a huge garage sale and raised like $5,000 in one day just from a garage sale. And so that was kind of a fun fundraiser and just crazy to watch how it worked. I mean, yeah. Gail, I think you were there. I'm just thinking back, remembering like girls in my D group
had their kids do a lemonade stand out front of the garage sale, and that money went to the adoption. And so it was definitely a team effort. It was a sweet day, but that
it was
combined,
a lot of fun.
It yeah, it was
a lot of
the
stuff.
Last, it was a lot of stuff. The last thing that is in play financially is the government does an adoption tax credit. And for a domestic infant adoption, that's just under $13,000. So I think it's like $12,800. So we did get $12,000 back from the government after the tax year. So of course, you know, we finalized in September, and then we filed taxes the following April, but we did get a huge chunk back. So all those things combined. Does that
yeah,
help answer
that was great.
Okay. Yeah. There are so many fun, clever ideas for people to fundraise. I've seen puzzles, I've seen crafts, there's also just a lot of grant companies around the country who would love to give you grants, and would also, there is such a thing as a interest-free adoption loan. So you can take an adoption loan with zero interest.
Does Promise 686 have a list of fun fundraising ideas or anything like that? Or do you know somebody that has a good resource list for ideas like that?
I can check. I know our agency had one. Promise does not, that I know of, but they're definitely around. You want me to send you one?
Yeah, I'd just be curious too if we could post it too and help people if they're thinking, just to know that there are a lot of different ways, and that's one thing that people do a lot. Just, I mean, I'm sure they hear it other ways, but just I'd love to have it to post and just us be a help to people as well.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Kelsey, how has it affected your mom? Like you having your mom's story and then you pulling that into, you know, your story.
It's funny. She, when we told her we were going to adopt, she just did not understand. She was like, why in the world would you do this if you could have biological kids? I mean, in the time when she was born, adoption was always because you couldn't have kids, not because you actually were passionate about it or cared about it. And that was the story of her adoptive mom. Her mom is that she was unable to have kids. So she was like, I mean, whatever you guys want to do, but like, I really don't understand why you would do that. But that being said, as the process has gone on and she's kind of watched it happen and been involved, I feel like she's definitely just kind of warmed to the idea and loved. I mean, she loves Eloise like a grandchild anyways, and I don't think she talks about her adoption story that much or thinks about it that much. She's been so supportive, but I feel like where it's been the most interesting is my relationship with my grandparents, my grandmas, you know, my mom's birth mom and my mom's adoptive mom. We named Eloise Eloise Ann, and my mom's adoptive mom who adopted her is Ann. So we gave her her middle name just to kind of honor that adoption link that they share. And then my mom's birth mom, it's been really sweet just to like write letters back and forth as she like kind of sends Eloise birthday gifts. I'll write back and just talk about how like Eloise's story is what it is because of what you started and what you chose. So that those relationships have been really sweet in the wake of it. But I don't know that my mom, I don't know what she thinks about it at this point.
Well, I was just wondering.
Yeah, I'm just grateful moving forward. You know, Bryce and I have talked about would we ever adopt again? I genuinely don't know the answer, but we always wanted Eloise to have someone who she could like kind of confide in and talk to and who she feels understood by. And so I'm so, so, so grateful that my mom will always, you know, I can always lean on her to be that person for her. So I hope that as she gets older and their relationship grows, that my mom can be a real resource for Eloise just to talk about all the feelings.
Yeah.
I missed the beginning of your spiel. Did you guys request like a girl and an infant, like, were you guys specific or did you just say whatever?
Yeah. I did not specify that. We said whatever. We were open to any race or gender. I mean, I had a boy and a girl. It was like, who cares? I already have the stuff for both, you know? So actually when we matched with her, we were told that she didn't know the gender of the baby, which was so fun because I, you know, am kind of a control freak. And when I was pregnant, it was like 100%, I'm going to find out as early as I can what the gender of these babies are. But what something about like this baby wasn't in my body. I was like, ooh, this will be so fun. Like we'll get a birthday surprise. Like that whole experience of like, what is it? What is it? And so we matched and I was all excited about that plan. And then a week later, the adoption person down in Florida that was working with Morgan was like, oh no, she totally knows. And it's a girl. but it was really sweet. We were really, really excited for a girl. Addie had actually, my oldest had been praying for a girl. Mm-hmm. And so it was sweet just to be able to see like, well, God answered your prayers for a sister. So we really didn't care.
I have a question. I've been trying to like put it into words. So I feel like I've seen posts online about like the vocabulary of adoption and how it's changed. So like in the past you say like put up for adoption and now it's like I don't know what the best wording is. So I try to be mindful of that when I'm talking about adoption with friends, but I just wanted to get your 2 cents on like what's the best way to phrase different things or how will you explain that to Eloise?
Yeah, no, that's a really thoughtful question as well. And it's tricky because every story is so different. I mean, mm-hmm. particularly when we're talking about birth moms, the language used to be gave up for adoption. Mm-hmm. And I think they've gotten away from that just because it kind of insinuates like their failure. Like, oh, I just gave her up because she was, you know, that there wasn't like a worth or an intentionality to it. Rather than now, I think the most appropriate language would be to say like she made an adoption plan for her, or she chose adoption for her, or chose a family for her, because it was an active role by the birth mom. Mm-hmm. In most cases, in our case, you know, there are other stories of where, you know, child services are involved and it actually not the birth mom's choice. But in our case, we would say, yeah, like, she chose adoption for you. This was a choice made by her. It wasn't that she gave you up or that she put up for adoption. The other stuff with like lingo generally, I am an open book and I am almost never offended by people and their questions. It just, I mean, that's just my personality, but like generally I would say, don't ask adopted parents things like how much did your baby cost or where did your baby come from or, you know, stuff like that as if they were an object and not like a human being. Mm-hmm. It's like reasonable, but at the same time, like, you know, when you have questions about finances, like, oh, how much did that cost? Or where? I mean, I love when people are like, oh, you adopted, where did she come from? And I'm like, oh, the far off remote land of Orlando, Florida. Like it is so glamorous. Like just right down the street. So those are some of the like kind of sticky points. And I know that that's definitely harder for parents who adopt transracially. Mm-hmm. They get more of that kind of stuff. I mean, when I'm in the grocery store, people don't know that Eloise is adopted. And so I don't get those questions. I love to talk about her story. Probably too much. Like in the beginning, I'd get the like, oh my gosh, you have a 2-month-old, you look great. And I'd be like, thank you, but she's adopted. Just because I feel like you never know who needs to hear about adoption, or maybe I just like to talk about her story. So as mm-hmm. she gets older, I'm going to have to be more intentional about choosing when and where to share her story and to give her the power to share her own story when and how she chooses. But for now, I love to talk about it.
That's cool. Thank you.
So how much do you know about fostering? You're really well knowledge in adoption. How much do you know about fostering?
I have learned a bit lately just working with Promise. But I'm definitely not like the expert of all experts. but do you have a specific question or just want to know about it generally?
Well, it's something that I've always had on my heart to do, but I feel like right now I'm drowning in my own children, so it's not the right time. Right. Which, you know, sometimes that's when the Lord calls you to do things, because you're already drowning, so why not, you know, throw in one more in? But like you said, but I guess I'm just, there's questions and things I think about in doing so. Like one would probably just be like, what is the even the first step? Like, do I just like hook up with Promise 686 and say that I'm interested? Is there like a Foster 101 course?
Yeah, great questions. Okay, so capacity is definitely something to think about first. I mean, the drowning in your kids thing is so real. And I always have to remember, because I'll tell myself, like, what would be one more baby or one more toddler? Like, we could totally foster. But the way that the foster care system works, like Liz mentioned before, there is a real reality to, like, appointments after appointments after appointments after appointments. So it's not just adding another kid to your schedule. It would mean organizing your schedule around this child's needs. A lot of the times they have extra medical appointments or therapy appointments. You have to be in court once a week. You have to do birth parent visits. So that is something that has stopped me in this season. I mean, that would be amazing if it didn't stop you, but just something to like weigh and consider as you think about, would that be good for your family right now? But say you are ready to jump in, praise God. Adoption 101 is called Adoption 101, but it actually is adoption, domestic, international, and foster care. A third of the classes talks about foster care and your opportunities and your first steps with that. So Adoption 101 would be a good option for you. And then after that, your big choice for foster care would be to decide, do I want to foster through an agency, a private agency, or do I want to go straight through my local government? So like for me, that would mean I live in Gwinnett County. I could go straight to Gwinnett County DFACS and get certified as a foster parent, or I could go through an organization, some of which are faith-based. One of them in our area is called Faith Bridge. They work directly with DFACS, but would be kind of a go-between. And so there's pros and cons of each of those options, but that would kind of be your next big decision. And then you would go to whichever organization you choose, and they would start the process of getting you certified and home studied and all of that. It is free, but that whole, there's many hours of training up front, and then the home study is a lot of paperwork. The need is so great though. And unfortunately with COVID right now, there are way less cases of reported abuse because teachers and a lot of the like mandated reporters aren't seeing the kids. So unfortunately, as we know, like stress is really high at home. And so we know that there's no doubt that abuse and neglect are increased, but reports are down. So as soon as things get back to normal, my guess is that reports are going to skyrocket and there's going to be an even greater need for foster homes. So if you feel like maybe that would be something God would be calling you to, I certainly think that this would be a needed time to consider that.
And then what about, what would be the first steps to being like a respite person? Is that the same channels?
It is. So respite caregivers are people who care for foster children short term. The need for respite caregivers has gone down a lot lately. About 2 years ago, I think, the government passed a law called Reasonably Prudent Parent. It's like RPPC, something like that. Basically, they decided that as a foster parent, you get the decision to say, if I would trust my biological children to the care of someone, then I can also trust my foster children to the care of them. It used to be such that if I was a foster family and I was going to go on vacation, my foster kid couldn't come with me and I'd have to find a respite caregiver. Or if I wanted to go on a date night, I'd have to find a certified respite caregiver. So that is not any longer the case. I could now leave my foster child with my babysitter who I leave my other kids with, and that would be allowed. So respite caregiver need has gone way down, but it is still a need for people who want to do like longer trips, like week or two long trips for without their foster children, or say, I don't know, they needed a home for a child just for a week or two. I mean, really short-term placements. But the way to get certified for those things would still be the same. You'd pick, do you want to go be a respite caregiver straight through your local government or through an agency? Mm-hmm. And you would go through a particular certification process for that. But you still do, you're still required a full home study. Mm-hmm.
So they allow you now to do like, to take foster kids and stuff on like a, if you were doing a road trip to Florida, they'd let you cross state lines and stuff with foster care kids now?
They will most likely allow it, but they require written approval. So like I'd have to go to my social worker and say, we're planning to go. Are you okay with it? Is everyone comfortable? They would sign and then you could do it.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That's good. Interesting.
Kelsey, I have kind of a random question. I hadn't ever thought about this. Long time ago, before Herschel and I got married, we volunteered. I can't remember the name of the organization. It was through DFAC. So when there would be court mandated counseling sessions that parents had to go to, there had to be childcare. Mm-hmm. And the group that we worked with, actually, the parents' classes were at a church and we kept the kids at the church. Do you know if they still do things like that? I mean, I feel like I'm, you know, past the age of fostering, but I thought, God, all of a sudden when you were talking, I thought we could do that again. We could take care of these kids when I guess home isn't bad enough to pull them out, but the mm-hmm. parents need some help. So yes. Do you know if that still happens?
It is. Yes, absolutely. Most of the time, those mandated classes are done through the agencies or the local government. So like Gwinnett County DFACs would put on their own and handle their own childcare. But lately, actually, there's been a rise of local churches doing these classes. And Perimeter, Promise 666, so the local group of Promise people at Perimeter have actually been like kind of thinking and praying about, could this be an option that we could implement at Perimeter? I mean, how cool could it be to bring in vulnerable birth parents and get to love on them, share the gospel with them, help teach them how to parent and take care of their kids? Mm-hmm. So it's probably long on the horizon for Perimeter, but it's something we're thinking about and praying towards. But there are other churches in the area who are doing it. Lifeline is an adoption agency and organization who are doing the trainings for churches for that. Okay. So I would probably start with them if you were interested in finding something like that around us.
Okay. It was sweet to have time with those kids because it was usually a couple of hours or more.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
Kelsey, I have a question. I have a friend that is in the adoption process now, and she has two kids of her own, like what you're saying, and they've had issues trying to get pregnant this go round, and so it's led them to adoption, but her mom is not on board with it at all, and she's reached out to me a lot, but I have never adopted kids, and it's something that I don't necessarily think that my husband and I are made to do, but I fully support people that do adopt. But I don't know how to really support her, like, in that time and not be, I guess, I don't know what word I want to put to it, I guess, nagging, like, because sometimes she'll come and she'll start talking to me about it, but then there's other times that, like, it's kind of a standstill, especially now with COVID, because I think they're kind of, like, at a standstill of not really being placed yet. So I don't want her to think that like I've completely forgotten about her like through that process, but I don't know, I guess, how do you support somebody during that and not sound totally nagging and not get into like, well, your mom should think this kind of thing, because I don't think it's my place to say like how her mom should feel, but I want to be a supportive friend because we've been friends for a long time and I know it's a big emotional thing that she's going through, but I don't know. I don't really know, I guess, how to come alongside of her in the right way during that process, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. That is not easy. And I don't know that I have like a great answer other than probably the stuff you're already doing, which is just like listening, loving her, listening probably a lot more than you talk, and just asking good questions and being supportive. I mean, part of the home study process, they ask you, like, how does your family feel about this? How does your church feel about this? How does your support system feel about this? Because it can be a polarizing issue. And when someone so close to you isn't on board, that is really, really hard. So I sympathize for her. That is tricky. Do you know what is her mom's like main holdup?
It sounds similar to like what your mom was saying, of the fact that her mom just doesn't understand why they would want to have a third baby when they have two healthy biological children. Yeah. And her husband travels a lot for work. And so they're like, with your husband traveling and all, like, it's going to be a lot more work on you to have to take care of the kids when he's gone. And now you have one that's adopted. And so it's just gotten into a nitpicky thing, and my friend feeling like her mom's telling her that she's inadequate. So It's just hard because I don't necessarily know how to support her and what to say during that. And I don't know if it's one that like you should go and constantly say, hey, how's it going, kind of thing now, or like wait until she comes to me to talk to me.
That is hard. I feel like
any advice or not.
I wish I had better advice. The thing about adoption is there is so many tricky situations and difficulties. I think you just have to come back to like, is this a calling God himself has placed on my life? If so, then we're going to stand with it. And so, I mean, I obviously don't know where your friend is spiritually and emotionally, where mom is spiritually, but I would love to just tell your friend, this is what I would ask you. Are you sure that God has called you to this now? And if she says yes, then I would say my advice would be to tell your mom, this is something that we're going to do. We're excited about doing. And I would just love if you would love us through it and support us through it. And if you have, maybe not share some of your dissenting opinions. Mm-hmm. That's what I would ask my mom. But as far as your role in it, are you like trying to ponder like, just supporting her when she comes to you, or like checking in with her regularly on it?
Yeah, I feel like I should do both, but I don't want to be unbelievably nagging to constantly check in, because I feel like that might stress her out with the fact that she hasn't heard anything new. So I'm like, I don't know if me checking in completely stresses her out.
Yes, no, I totally understand that. I feel that with friends who are waiting. It's like, hello, I want updates, and I don't want to miss an update if there is one, but I don't want to make the waiting that much harder for you.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
I know. I feel that too. I don't know. I don't have an answer. Just as much as maybe you just pray the Lord would lead you, that he would prompt you to text when it is appropriate, that you would check in with her on adoption, but also other things like, how's your heart? How are your kids? Like what, just like a friend, check in on other things as much as you would check in on that.
Makes sense.
Yeah, it's hard. I will just validate you that is tricky.
Yeah,
it's complicated.
Okay.
Is she a type of friend you could ask, like, how I want to be there for you, and like, is there some like regular frequency that I can do that, or like just so it's almost like a scheduled thing?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I don't know.
You can give her my contact info if she wants to talk to somebody. We waited a long time.
Yeah, I just feel like it gets to be like pregnancy all over again, kind of, that you're like, are you pregnant? And it's like, I'll just tell you when I am pregnant. Like, you don't want to ask, but at the same time, you want to like be involved when you know somebody's trying. So I don't know. It's really weird. I'm like, I don't know enough to know like the right protocol in that avenue of what you're supposed to do and what you're not. So I was just curious.
I just put my little email over there. So if anything else comes up or anything else you want to talk about, feel free. Actually, I'll put my phone number too. You can text me.
There we go. Kelsey, you've done a great job. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. You're so sweet.
Thank you for sharing. It's such a sweet story, and she's such a sweet little peanut. Mm-hmm. And Addie and Dalton, I can't. It hurts my heart that Addie's six now. That's such a big girl sounding age, anyway. But she is a big girl. Anyway, I just love your family, and I'm so glad you shared your heart and gave us a lot of very helpful information, especially about Promise 686 and all the things going on. So, anyway.
Thank you, Gail. Thanks, Vicki.
Oh, thank you. So we are done for the year, which I hate to say because I love seeing y'all's faces and walking. But if you joined a little bit late, we want to get your feedback. So if you have any feedback on Moms Connect, suggestions for next year, put that in the chat box also. And then we'll do some kind of brainstorming session. We usually do it on my back porch. So that's not going to happen.
That's so sad.
I know. So, because we want to start working on it soon. So if you want to kind of be on the team or on a big call to help us brainstorm, let us know that too. And it'll be in the next few weeks.
As far as what I should put in a email out to everybody, is it pretty much that? Just like, thanks guys, great year. If you want to be a part of planning, let me know.
Yes, and any suggestions, they can email me or you, and you can me or Gail. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Well, if you guys think of anything else, I'll probably – Sunday's kind of like my day when I try to send things out because for some reason I just remember it better on Sundays. So if you can remember anything between now and Sunday before I send that of additional things you want me to throw in there, let me know.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Morgan. You've done a great job on the email.
I know it. You really have.
Morgan. Thanks. It's a blessing and a curse that people know that I'm doing it. I'm like, I'm going to say this and everyone's going to know it's me.
Good. It's
very You're no good. Longer anonymous.
Oh, Kelsey, don't be surprised if we ask you back again next year.
Yes.
I'm just
I you miss ahead. You guys. Mm-hmm. I miss Moms Connect. I like hearing about that on Vicki's porch night. That's like my favorite night of the year for the past few years. So
I got really hungry thinking about that dinner. I was man, we're not going to have that dinner.
I'm craving focaccia and lemon chicken all of a sudden.
I know.
It was the restaurant opens again on the 6th, though. So Blue House will be open if you want to get your fix.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Well, it's been a great year.
Yes.
Thank y'all so much for being a part of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and thanks to, I know all the veteran moms aren't here, but thank you, Vicki and Martha, for all the baby holding and food and loving and everything that y'all do and encouragement for the moms. So
we love it. We love
y'all. It would not happen if I didn't have y'all. So thank you for the best.
Well, it's fun. Well, y'all have a good evening.
Yes. And hopefully we'll see you walking the halls of the church sometime in the not too distant future. That's what we'll say. Okay. Good night, everybody. Jenny, I'm glad you were here.
Gail, is there like from the staff, does the staff know anything about when they're hoping to open or are they just arms in the air? No idea.
No, they put some preliminary things together, but everything's kind of in a holding pattern, you know, to be modified. Mm-hmm. So, but there's been discussion. So they're in the process of making that plan, which is really great. I think it makes everybody hopeful, but you know, it's going to be a slow process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And probably even when we do, maybe everybody won't come back right away either. So it's just going to be a process. So we don't know. We're still working at home for a good while. So
yeah,
I'm glad we all can.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right, y'all. Good night. I'm going to miss your faces.
Thanks for being Kelsey.
Thank you, guys.
See you later.
Good night.
Bye. Y'all are awesome.
Bye-bye.
Bye.